I'm so pleased to be here. And I feel like sometimes it can be a little discouraging to say, yeah, all of the magical things that we think will make everything better will not. But I think that this crowd knows. I mean, you're committers and creators, and you know that the tech in and of itself is not going to fix everything. The community that we build will. As Rich mentioned, my name is Bridget. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which most people in the US, we say Minnesota, and they assume we're Canadian. Please annex us. And I work for Microsoft. More on that later. And I podcast with Arrested DevOps. Mostly we've been doing live shows at conferences lately, but we have a few good guests scheduled soon. And I also am the chief cook and bottle washer for the DevOps Days organization. So this is, next year will be our 10th year, and this 2018 we have 71 conferences on 6 continents. So if you would like to run one in McMurdo Station, like definitely talk to us, or you could get yourself on the wait list for the Montreal one, which is October 10th and 11th. They are already sold out, but you know, wait lists sometimes let people in. Okay, usually I'm talking about cloud and containers and Kubernetes. That's not what I'm talking about today. However, I feel like Microsoft paid for my travel, so I have to tell you we're hiring. This is what everyone tells you from conferences, right? And I will say that this is what a lot of messaging around, you know, everything we do in tech and like, let's talk about the social element because that's so much harder. And I look at this and I think, that is totally a lie though. Like, what is actually true is that computers are hard and humans are hard. And then you put them together and it's hard. And like, this is not the thing, this thing we do is not easy. And I think it really diminishes the work we do to say something is easy, because it's not. But as we all know, when we're building complex systems, the interconnected nature of the complex systems and the fact that these systems have a lot of unanticipated side effects means that we will often build systems that, whether they, you know, are like AI, which, okay, algorithms, they're not magic. But whatever it is, we'll sometimes get effects that we weren't looking for, that we didn't want. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit today, is the exponential complexity. And like, okay, complex socio-technical systems are hard, film at 11. I don't know about you, but I got a CS degree in the 90s because I didn't want to talk to people. Spoiler alert. Tech is full of talking to people. I mean, we all know this in our organizations, in our open source projects. The fact that we have great code is not actually going to win every argument, especially if we approach it as trying to have an argument, right? And it's interesting when I look back at, I still have my Scheme textbook from the first CS class I took, and I look at that picture and I'm like, they're wizards. This is awesome. And then I think, like, okay, the medieval alchemists on that cover, like, they're doing spells with lambda calculus and, you know, cutters, you know, but because Lisp. But we also are doing what could be construed as the closest possible thing to magic. Now, stay with me for a second. You're shaping reality with your words, whether you say them or type them. Then reality occurs based on basically your will. Like, that's a weighty responsibility, and it also means that we have a lot of work to do to make sure that the code we write and the impact that we can have does good things in the world. I mean, hopefully, like, not bad things. And it is a lot of responsibility. And I think that in tech, we do talk about anti-patterns, but we focus on the technical anti-patterns. We focus on the anti-patterns that we know will have bad results, and we maybe sometimes elide or ignore the social anti-patterns that we've also noticed do not have the best possible results. And the solutions to a lot of difficulties that can appear, like a technical discussion, a lot of us have noticed, We might be able to resolve those by, I don't know, talking to other humans? Wait, that can't be right. But like, it is, right? So let's, I made a short list, and I feel like, you know, making a five things list is already reducing things too much, but I made a short list that we'll talk about here of things that I think we need to remember. The first one being, we can't actually solve everything with tech. And if that does not seem obvious to you, welcome to tech. You must be new here. And I think that because we end up looking at and then projecting from a lot of technology into the future, this is from a late 19th century series of drawings of what the tech was going to be like. You can see they're having video chats. But they can't hear that person over the video chat. It's probably fine. But I think about like predictions like noted tech thought leader Jane Austen. I'll try to quote this directly. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a techie in possession of any production code whatsoever must be in want of a container platform. I'm pretty sure that's the way Jane Austen put it. And it's, again, like, in tech, we very often focus on, we will definitely solve all these problems, you know, the dev and the ops and whatever, this wall of confusion that exists, we'll definitely solve these problems if we put some containers in there between the dev team and the ops team. And this picture, by the way, is definitely wrong. I usually remix it to be a little bit more aligned with the incentives that are driving these teams. If your team is rewarded for shipping and someone else's team is rewarded for stability or vice versa, your incentives are misaligned. And so, yeah, sure, there's going to be conflict. That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with tech, per se. I mean, maybe somebody is YOLOing things out to production that are a terrible idea, but that's not necessarily what's happening there. Basically, if you have contention inside your organization about the technical decision-making that is affecting everyone's lives, C groups and namespaces are the least of your problem. Like, you have much bigger problems than that, right? And this is a picture that Pete Cheslock put up, and I put up the date of that tweet. This is 2015, so this isn't new. Pete Cheslock put this up at a DevOps Days in Austin and was using it, I think, to illustrate that, okay, if we're going to talk about silos inside an organization, your feature teams and your production platform engineers are not the only teams. Like, there's lots and lots of other teams, and one team that maybe gets short shrift or, you know, as we see in this picture, does not have a good time, is your security team. Because if people think they can paste on security at the end, like, I have exciting data breach news for them. It doesn't usually work that way. But, again, the way you're not having these problems with security because you had bad tech, you probably had bad communication through your organization about when you were going to do that security review. And the thing that makes me sad is that this tweet of Pete Cheslock's is from 2015, and people are still shipping heavyweight app containers with an entire full unpatched operating system in them. So, like, this problem, even though we know about it, doesn't necessarily go away. Okay, so if you're saying to yourself right now, oh, but at my organization, we are DevOpsing right. Like, whatever you think that means. If anyone knows what that word means, please tell me. If you say for your containers, you're like, oh, we keep all of our credentials in, you know, someplace secure, and the credentials only go in at runtime, and we're running the same containers in every environment. And it's like, maybe you just ship lightweight containers with static binaries. Like, okay, but are your traffic patterns and data very similar or the same in every environment? Like, kind of I like the saying that goes, you should rename staging to theory, as in, it works in theory. It's like, it works in staging. It works in theory, not on production, right? So this is where, again, like, there's a lot of really useful tech things you could be doing, but there's a lot of people problems inside your organization, probably, unless you work in an organization not staffed by humans, in which case, you know, I hope your robots all get along really well. But there's problems inside organizations where people have the desire to argue about tools or the desire to argue about definitions of words. There's a great tweet by Andrew Clay Schaefer that I don't have in this deck where he says, who wants to argue with me about the definition of made-up words? And it's like there's a lot of conflicts in our organization that we can't buy a tool from a vendor. I work at a vendor. We would love to sell you tools and services, but they will not solve the problem of getting people inside your organization to talk to each other. And getting information about your systems is non-trivial, right? Again, Schaefer likes to call the state of any running system continuous partial failure. Like, that's what we got. So at this point, I think it's pretty typical for people to delineate and say, this is where we're going to focus. And having focus for your organization is great. Saying that everything worked in our development environment, it worked on my laptop, like, really? Because I will point you to the Vasa, if you're not familiar with this 17th century ship. The TLDR on it is, turns out, scope creep and lack of documentation is super unhelpful and can lead to ships sinking on their first voyage. And that idea of, like, well, we designed and, you know, planned it all well, that's cool, but, like, cool user story, bro. That doesn't actually make sure it's going to work in production. And calling that someone else's problem, super unhelpful. So, again, you can have basically, all the great tech in the world isn't going to solve any of those problems. Those are problems we have to solve with talking. What? Okay. Then I want to focus a little bit on the interactions between your teams. I talked about it a little bit on a high level, but I would say, like, our distributed systems that we're building today are really complex. All right, that's a given. We know that they're increasingly complex, and we can't have perfect mental models. But when we focus just on shipping, all right, like, let's just ship something, that doesn't necessarily make sure that we've architected something that we can debug or, you know, add anything to. The way we try to compose our teams is also a problem, because I have sad news for people who think that microservices are going to prevent their, basically, if you have decomposed your organization into a lot of small independent teams, like, your two pizza teams are going to still need to have conversations over that pizza with each other, because they still are building things that are going to interact with each other. And also, like, how hungry are these people and how large are these pizzas? I feel like there's a lot of unanswered questions in the two pizza team thing. But I think that we're getting a little bit, I think we're in the trough of disillusionment about microservices now. Like, people are starting to realize that maybe they don't solve absolutely everything. Maybe they don't make, say, troubleshooting as easy as we would like it to be. And I think it's also, it's useful and maybe important for us to realize that absolutely everything is trade-offs. An old boss of mine, Tim Gross, calls it conservation of complexity. Like, you're still going to have it. You make the mindful decision to move that complexity around to somewhere else. That doesn't make it go away. That's not how any of these things work. But we've all been in those project planning meetings where somebody is like, and now we get the new what's it, and everything becomes easy. And we're like, this doesn't sound true, because it's not. All right, so basically, you're going to have complexity somewhere in your stack. You just have to decide where you want that to be. And again, breaking up the organization into a smaller subsets that then have a zillion interactions with each other, what could go wrong there? It also doesn't solve the problem of all of those teams need to determine where the boundaries of responsibilities lie. People love to do that by, like, say, org chart, because that maps to tech perfectly, right? Like, every time you have a new microservice, you just spin up a new team. This will scale infinitely. But Mel Conway wrote this in the 1960s. And I like to think that, and he's still around, he's on Twitter, which is amazing. But I like to think that he's basically talking about today. Like, except he wouldn't have called the paper How Do Committees Invent? Because that buries the lead. Like, today it would be a clickbait listicle. But when a lot of people think that Conway's law means that your org chart needs to look exactly like your Death Star architecture diagram, and that's not true. Because the very important word that I want to focus on here is communication. It's not that your software has to look exactly like your team, but it is going to look an awful lot like how your team and teams communicate and interact with each other. Back to that pesky people problem. The CS profs lied to me. They didn't. They never promised me that I wouldn't have to talk to people. I just thought that I would play with computers and it would be fine. But like, say you have your excitingly deconstructed monolith that is a, you know, perfect set of microservices that you can totally monitor and completely understand, because that's reality. Like, what if you have breaking changes? And like, what if, say, schema migrations in one part of your data store like are affecting people somewhere else? And everyone who is selling you, you know, monetarily or idea-wise, on some exciting new what's it, always shows you the Hello World app. And they don't show you the app with, you know, the legacy data that you actually need to migrate without corrupting it. Because that's the hard reality that we actually live with. And I would say, like, whether you're looking on docs.microsoft.com or somewhere else, like, always look for those examples that have a little bit more complexity. Because, I mean, I assume that you're not going to spend any money or time migrating your Hello World apps. And also, like, turns out, state matters, right? So you're not going to break into a zillion teams just based on your microservices architecture. But whatever teams you do have probably should be cross-functional to some extent, just so that there are people who are in the tribe of that team who can say, security. It's a thing, right? So, and we've all heard from organizations that say, like, oh, our teams are all independent. We only communicate through APIs. It's like, okay. I mean, that probably is fine unless, say, you want to launch a new version of the API and maybe there's something you want to deprecate. Is that something you're just never going to do? Like, there's a lot of open questions there. Like, at some point, you're going to have overlapping, conflicting needs. So, like, have a conversation, you know, bring some pizza. All right, like, the next thing I want to cover is that, again, and you may notice a theme here, these are all about the human communication stuff. Tech is made out of people. I mean, hopefully the pizza is not made of Soylent Green if you're having a pizza conversation. But, like, the tech actually is. And I think it's really easy for us to put ourselves into the, oh, we're focused on this project. Oh, we only care about this stack. Oh, we do this very similar thing to other people, but we just call it something different. So we're way different than they are. It's like, I have news for you. Like, none of us are a unique special snowflake, and like, we're not that different. We're a lot more alike. I assure you that this and probably every other conference I've been at in the last, you know, 5 years are full of people that a lot of our relatives who work in medicine or agriculture or whatever would be like, you're all the same. And you're like, no, we are different in these very specific ways. And it's like, we're not really. I think if we focus a lot more on what we're trying to accomplish rather than our very specific, narrowly defined tribe, it's, hey, get together with your tribe, talk about stuff. But just remember, the other tribes are a lot like you. The ones over the hill, just like you. And it's it's a lot more important to focus on what we're accomplishing. And from an individual level, I think it can be really tempting in tech to just focus on getting to work on the things that are going to help you with your resume level up and are going to help you get your next job and are going to help you with your very specific goals. And I think the problem with resume-driven development is that it can be very easy to end up with things in your stack where you're like, what did you build? You know, and then someone has gotten their resume-driven development level up, and someone else is left maintaining that. And so again, this has to do more with the communication between the people than it does, and like the people's motivations, than it does the actual tech that's being chosen. Like whatever slow burning tire fire a given IT project creates, we can all bet it's gonna burn for a good long while. I think that you can take a look at Wardley's Pioneer Settlers Town Planners model. I think that it's interesting because I'm definitely Team Settlers, and not just because I'm obsessed with Settlers of Catan, though yes, I am wearing Settlers of Catan leggings, but I really like scaling things up and operationalizing them. I know that a lot of the glamour and the glory in tech focuses on instantiation. And so I kind of push back on that. I'm like, what about scaling? Because that's pretty cool too. And I want people to feel motivated, if they're interested in that, in working on that. And also, Astrid Atkinson is a director at Google, and I think she's been at Google. She likes to say that she's been at Google since it was a little startup she joined in 2004. It's grown a bit. And I think this is super true. And I had retweeted a different version of this tweet, and I went and found this one to screen cap last night and was like, what? I didn't retweet this one, so I had to. And then I think everybody else did too this morning. Because it's our impact on each other is a lot more important than winning any specific tech discussion or shipping any specific software. I mean, tools can and do help with all of this, but they don't make us care. Okay, so I would say, like, all the talk of you know, by the way, all the talk of building walls, no, we're not doing that. But I think that there is like that wall of confusion that we had earlier. It's not really tiny and adorable and you can look over it, right? Like, it's a lot worse. It's a lot more like, sometimes everything seems overwhelming. And I think that that's not what I'm talking about when I say good fences make good neighbors. I'm talking about the idea of boundary objects and conditions. We need some kind of definition and constraints to work. We need some kind of information. Like, again, something like containers can help with the metaphorical or all too real divide between teams. But finding the right boundaries for even service boundaries is, again, a human problem that we definitely need to talk through. Like, it's never as unambiguous as, like, the first round of architecture diagrams makes it look. And I think that, like, so if any of you have siblings, I have four, and I think deciding what's yours and what's theirs is, like, the basis of every sibling rivalry, you know, detente that you have. And I like to think of Eric Brewer's CAP theorem here because as a distributed systems expert and coworker of mine now, awesomely, Katie McCaffrey likes to put it, you can pick one. You can't pick two because you don't get to pick not having partitions. Like, you're going to have partitions. You just have to decide how you're going to deal with them. And you know, because physics and math, they exist. But because we live on a big round planet, mostly water, and people are making decisions while other people are sleeping or at conferences or on planes or mostly sleeping, if you are trying to have a distributed team, you need to distribute the decision-making to the edge. I can tell you that this works with the DevOps Days organization. People are deciding things all the time. There are like three going on right now. There's no way that central control can decide everything. And yet a lot of IT organizations still have a pretty centralized decision-making process. And I would just challenge you to empower yourself by letting go of as much as you possibly can. And that, yes, that does mean lower bandwidth communication. But I think that open source projects have this settled. Like, you understand that you need TCP-based communication, not UDP-based. Like, you need sins and acts in your conversation. We already know how to build computers to do that. And we can do that in our conversations with each other, too, which is to say, when you're making a decision, and I know the Apache model is great for this, like, do we have consensus? Like, and so many corporations do not think that way. And they really need to restate what they heard, to checksum what they think is going to happen. Like, that is the way to decide things. And that means, like, when we're making architectural decisions, we do not make them based on what the most glamorous stickers are on the adorable laptop. And, you know, is the kitten sitting on... I feel like there's so many decisions that are pretty much made by, like, well, the kitten sat on the Docker sticker, so... And it's like, no, the laptop is warm, all right? Occam's razor said this is a much simpler problem to solve than you would think. I think thoughtful decisions about our architecture and well-considered constraints can make this sort of thing go a lot more smoothly. Again, containers help us with the scope and definition, but they don't magically solve all those other discussion points. And this is when we're saying, let's just build what's right. Like, this is the part where I tell you, I wasn't surprised at all by the Cambridge Analytica stuff, because I worked at a company that did very similar things in 2012 to 2014. I was running HBase clusters full of things that people definitely didn't opt in to their friends giving us from Facebook. And I think, like, it's a lot, we focus on, let's just solve this right, but we don't necessarily focus on, and are we solving it in a way that is considering our impact on society? And yes, that is harder than getting HBase or MongoDB to do your will, but, like, you probably want to try. Because, like, we now have the technology to create the oppressive cyberpunk dystopia that we've all been reading about since the 80s. Like, great. I think that we do need to remember that the people who can build the oppressive cyberpunk dystopia are us, and we shouldn't. And all of the people who can't build it and can't really stop us from building it, they aren't NPCs. Like, they're actually protagonists of their own narrative, too. And, like, we have a pretty strong responsibility there. So that just brings us to, hey, it would be great if we didn't make the world worse. That's a pretty low bar, right? Because, like, we know that the world is changing. I mean, the Kubernetes project, I want to say, is, like, 4 years old. And maybe 4 years ago, we didn't recognize that that was going to change some things in tech. It also doesn't mean that, hey, we have solved tech now. We can Kuber some netties, and we've solved everything. Like, no, that's not realistic either. It's going to keep moving. It's going to keep changing. We need to keep moving and keep changing because, you know, as Deming puts it, like, we don't have to modernize or change or learn something new. But if we don't, we're probably going to be the sad snowman that March. And we have, I think it's really easy for us to figure out that we know what works and then not change anything past that. But you become legacy so fast, super fast. And I think tech also really likes to say that legacy, oh, that's the bad thing that we're not doing. But legacy is also the thing that works. And it's also where your customers and money live. And so focusing on making sure that we aren't leaving it behind, super important. Again, back to the human factors. Nobody wants to be told they are in sad mode and everyone else gets to be in awesome mode and move forward. Like, that's, no one wants that. And if you put people in sad mode and tell them that, you know, you're not changing or modernizing anything and you don't get to learn anything new, like, how long do you think they're gonna work with you? So that's not realistic. So again, this is the get people to all pull together by recognizing they have human motivations. There's no, like, flowchart or checklist that can do this, but there is just recognizing and understanding that other people have needs and that they're trying to fulfill those needs. And I think that this is my spouse. We're canoeing in the boundary waters. Because, did I mention Minnesota's right next to Canada? Think about us. I look at that ecosystem, and it's complex, and it's changing, and there's fire and renewal. And I think, like, it sometimes feels like we live in the darkest timeline, but unless the walls of the multiverse collapse and reform themselves with, say, Minnesota being part of Canada, please annex us. We live in this reality. We need to make the best of it. And I feel super lucky and excited to work someplace that is motivated to make the best of it. I work at Microsoft. I use a Mac, and I get people to use Linux. Like, that's pretty much living the dream. Or we can conclude that this timeline might not be the original timeline, but I'll take it. And Microsoft is genuinely focused on open source and making a better world. You can come talk to us at the table. You can go to my colleague Ross Gardler's session on balancing transparency and secrecy. Gee, the sort of thing a lot of us are trying to do in our organizations tomorrow. And yeah, I would say to build a future that we actually all want to live in, we have to build it together. So thanks.